Welcome to the Dollars and Cents of Westworld podcast, where we try and figure out if it would be possible to run Westworld as an actual business. This exercise will cover the entire show, so be aware that spoilers will follow. Also, this is a discussion about running Westworld as a functioning business. It is not a criticism of the story itself, as we do understand there's dramatic licenses at work here. Please don't send us hate mail about that.
Welcome back to the Dollars and Cents of Westworld. Today we're joined by Chris, Joe, Tom, and me, Pat. We're going to be talking about warnings and error reporting today. We're going to go a little bit over, you know, what are they, what do they do well, why bother with them at all, and then we're going to go into what's missing in the episode. So we're going to be talking about host warnings, park warnings, and it's going to be sprinkled in there with a little bit of sex and murder. So let's get started. So what good are they? What good are warnings and errors? Why bother with them? Don't they distract from important things like, oh, delivering new features or, you know, allowing people to yell about the size of host noses? I mean, let's not waste time on unimportant things. So why bother with this, guys?
Wow. So, yeah, diagnostic information like warnings and errors are totally useless if everything goes correct and never crashes.
Which happens all the time, right?
Yeah, dude, these are robots. They're good at this. But seriously, though, if you are starting to pile on some warnings or errors, it means that there is a problem with a certain application or with an environment in which an application is running. So in this case, if a single host is starting to report warnings like, hey, man, you tried to shut me down and I didn't shut down, like, that's a fucking problem.
All right. So, yeah, thanks for the chuckle there, Tom.
All right. So, Joe, let me play devil's advocate just a little bit. Pat did a little bit in the introduction about, hey, we could be doing other features or more important things than just logging and error reporting. I know that there's got to be some level of error reporting that we actually have to put in just to make sure everything is running well. But I've been on teams in the past where the engineering team wants to go way over the top. We have to spend hours and hours and hours making sure every single little thing is logged and checked and just verified at any given process and any given time we can check everything. Like you said, we're dealing with robots. But at the same time here, there's got to be some sort of happy medium that we can settle on. Can you give me an example maybe of something that we saw in the show that they did well, and then maybe we can build off of that to figure out where we want to draw some sort of line when it comes to this stuff?
Sure. In the, I believe, first episode and like four other episodes, you see Dolores going to a horse, putting something, a can of soup or something in a bag, and the can falls out. And she looks down to pick it up, and there is some guy, may it be Teddy, who's just shining knight in shining armor.
There you go. Nice.
Yes. And so something like that is going to happen so often, and sometimes it gets interrupted. Not a big deal. It's going to change a storyline. But I think one of the ways that you want to gauge just how much error reporting you're going to need in this is the daily active users. Do we know how many guests are in the park at a time?
I think you're talking about just general monitoring, but those things you just said aren't warnings or errors, right?
Well, you could turn that into a warning or an error. So take the basic case that Joe just had, right? He was talking about something that is part of the narrative that happens every day or every other day. If that doesn't happen, is that a bad thing? Joe was saying at one point, maybe it's not if Teddy doesn't show up, but if Dolores doesn't make it to that spot and doesn't trigger that action, maybe that is a problem because it has knock-on effects for other narratives or other things that are going on at the park at the same time.
Yeah, I can see Sizemore like throwing a fit about that. I have to rewrite all these stories.
Yeah, in general, yes.
So I think it's probably important to explain for people that aren't necessarily familiar with it that there's definitely a distinction between monitoring and logging, or at least in my viewpoint, and any of you feel free to correct me here with your own, there should be a distinction there. Logging is really just capturing the information of whatever's happening in the system or systems as it's happening, right? It's pretty much just things happen, we're recording it. Monitoring is distinctly watching for certain scenarios or triggers to occur so that you can immediately act on them. Logging is all fine and dandy for going back after the fact and potentially doing some debugging. But as far as catching some of the immediate error scenarios that we're seeing here, I think most of what we're actually referencing should be monitoring. If we care about breaking out of one of the loops, we should have monitoring that's catching that, and then we can go back and look at the logging potentially to find out why we broke out of that loop to begin with. Pat?
So if I'm understanding what you're saying right, what you're saying then is that monitoring is much more focused and targeted on particular things, whereas logging probably lends itself more to a broad-based approach. Is that fair?
I think that's fair, yes.
It's hard to have effective monitoring without logging the correct information.
But would you say that you need to have your monitoring set up to just capture the same details that are being captured in the actual logging? Like, you would potentially be logging what's happening in the system itself, right? In terms of what processes are happening within the execution during the storylines, since we'll probably keep touching back to this, right? But while you would want to know the paths and the different branching elements that occurred or what was happening within like the host memory at the time, monitoring would be a much more specific trigger that you could potentially be looking for. For example, if a host ever said, "It doesn't look like anything to me," that gives you a very acute trigger that you would be able to set up so that you receive some sort of error reporting or you have some sort of warning that goes off with your monitoring system. It's like doing a health check, right? Your health checks are much more of your monitoring versus the logging, which is what you probably go back and look at after the health check is detected that something is wrong.
Okay, yeah, I think we agreed with each other there.
I think we did. I just spoke more at length.
So I think we had the standing question of what do they do well in Westworld?
So my default answer is nothing.
Yeah, why didn't we write this down in the notes?
No, I think I remember one thing that they did. So there was one point where they were debugging and a host came back to from an answer with unit self-corrected within an acceptable window. And that seemed like something that was both good and bad. Sometimes that scares the hell out of me of, okay, well, what does a host think an acceptable window is? But that feels like at least the engineering department did their job to figure out, well, we can have some errors as long as we're within, you know, this point to this point. I don't need to be alerted or the monitoring doesn't have to tip me off to say something's wrong. I can just let a host take care of itself, which in the end we want it to do, right? We want to have as little human intervention as possible. But beyond that, I guess I probably side with Chris. Yeah, I don't know how much else they did right.
Yeah, I would love to see their data science team that came up with those numbers.
Yeah.
Do they have a data science team?
There was
they barely have data.
It.
All right, so we keep beating around the bush, and I feel like Chris and Joe are probably just waiting to be unleashed here. Should we start going down the road of what are some of the things or the examples of things that they're doing wrong?
Yeah, let's start with the host warnings too, and we'll hit the park warnings separately. So these are the things that we could have been warned about or that could have been reported or monitored or logged related to hosts in particular.
While I'm chomping at the bit for this one, Joe, I insist that you go first and I'll back clean up.
Okay. The first thing that I see is that Maeve was making security changes and nothing was freaking out. Nothing in the system was saying, hey, this host is changing their own access control list. Like, this host has gone rogue. There was none of that. Nothing. With just the slightest amount of logging or monitoring would be able to mitigate that situation. Disagree?
I agree completely. I think that the fact that we're not capturing, and I'm using the royal we here, the fact that nothing is being captured around security violations. When security protocols are broken, there's no alert triggered whatsoever. There's no error reporting around that. There's no real accurate records around some of these too. To touch again still on the security restrictions a little bit, we found out at one point in one of the episodes, and one of you can probably recall it more clearly, but when they realize that Arnold has accessed the code base and pushed in changes, nobody thought that someone that's been dead for years and has not had active access would trigger any sort of concern or warning. There's no monitoring to see who's actually actively pushing to the code base. The investigations where they talk about people having to go back and look to see who had pushed in code seems to be kind of a shot in the dark for a lot of things. It's kind of a cluster. Pat?
It is. And so what I wanted to tack on there was, yeah, Arnold checking in code despite, you know, being dead for a couple of decades is impressive. But to most of the company, they didn't know about the guy. Even that ought to be concerning. Here you have someone who has no business being in the system, shouldn't be in the system, and to see check-ins from names that don't make sense, well, you do have a security department, and apparently you're worried about corporate espionage. Like, these things should have some kind of monitoring.
Let me play devil's advocate. I have a feeling I'm going to be doing this
God.
A little bit. Yeah, sorry, buddy. Is it even remotely possible that they have some of this stuff in place, but the systems that we're talking about here are just so complex that people are either not watching the levers or not getting alerted correctly? Just because some of the things that you guys brought up is perfectly 100% valid, and I agree with a lot of it, but there's got to be some... Things fall through the cracks, right? It's always going to happen. Is this a possibility?
Yeah, I think it's a possibility. What good is the tool if you can't use it? And when you're talking about all of these things falling through the cracks, it's more like, what good is that tool chest if it's locked?
Yeah, no, I get that point. It's not that I'm trying to excuse everything. And right, like we say, there's dramatic license at work. Everything is, you know, otherwise we're not going to have a good TV show to watch. But just from my experience in day-to-day engineering in the real world, things fall through the cracks. Things get missed. And, you know, usually that turns around into a new feature or new something that a team works on to make sure that something is accurately monitored or it is, you know, actively alarmed when things go wrong. My guess is that a host making security changes to themselves was probably not something that was concepted at some point in time when the requirements were drawn up. But it's something to keep in mind.
And that's probably why you should always have a QA engineer involved in your grooming sessions, Tom.
Lack of imagination on the product side. Got it.
Right. To continue your point a little bit, I can see where you're coming from on the fact that if you're capturing everything, how do you filter out the noise? You still need to be able to pick out those important things that you really care about, right? So while for some of these that we've seen, maybe it was outside of scope of the imagination of the POs or the developers as they were kind of developing some of these systems, but some things that excuse doesn't fly with. Dolores swatting a fly. We're going to have an entire series of conversations around law violations, but from this perspective, from the monitoring and logging perspective, that's something you should definitely be sending alerts on, or when you have your hosts violating any of the laws.
In case our audience here doesn't remember this scene, it's, I think, right at the end of the very first episode, indicating, I think, that Dolores is starting to deviate from her programming a little bit, where there's a fly that lands on her, and we'd seen on other hosts that they land on the hosts and nothing happens, but there she swats it, suggesting that there's been some kind of compromise on her, the restriction on violence on her.
Exactly. So even if you're going to pick and choose your battles, that should have been one of those battles that you decided to fight for.
As long as guest safety is still a priority, that I think that's needed.
Well, they do phase out that feature at the end of the show. But to tag on to Chris's line about some of these hills should be fought for, I think that another opportunity there that was missed is that modern things, like the picture that we see Abernathy get caught on, those things have the opportunity to lock up hosts, which is a serious degradation of the experience for our guests. And, I mean, it's clearly causing a measurable difference in the hosts themselves. You'd think that that would be the kind of thing you'd want to catch, and not find the next day when Dolores' father never moves from his chair. You'd think you'd want to find that as it happens. Even just logging the phrase, "doesn't look like anything to me," would have been sufficient. But does not appear to be in place.
I mean, yeah, it's, if we want to just start listing things off that didn't happen, things that were not monitored, I'm just going to go in no particular random order. Anyone feel free to jump in here. We have a couple of hosts that end up having sex with each other and burning out of the tent without having any sort of guest presence around. No warnings. We have Dolores beating up someone who's on the board with, again, no sort of error reporting. We have hosts repeatedly, and this is more specific to Maeve than anyone else, but repeatedly coming out of sleep mode on their own. Apparently, this is not a process that we believe the host should be able to have, but yet it's able to repeatedly happen without any sort of warning. And furthermore, there are people that are presumably going back through Maeve's logs at some point in time while they're tracking her behaviors, and this isn't detected at all. So we're not even tracking whether or not they're asleep or awake, which brings about a whole other bunch of questions about what the hell these people are doing here.
I think they're working really hard on having sex with the host and not getting caught, Chris.
Oh, man.
I don't know. Those are glass walls. I don't think they're putting in a lot of effort into not getting caught.
All right. So we talked a lot of about stuff with, you know, the host itself. Pat, you talked about there's another group of things I think you wanted to go towards, which was, what, the park and warnings in the park? Well, how about you take us there so Chris can cool down for a little bit?
Sure. So the host monitoring that we were talking about before would probably be done either like on the host hardware itself or done by the park cameras and such, but in particular, very focused on a particular host. All of the things that we were talking about, they would be reporting status of a host at a time. But you might have reporting that was region-based, parts of the park, the boundaries of the park, the entrance to the park. And that would be an entirely different class of monitoring. And I think that we had found some things in our collective watching of the show that we thought were opportunities to improve that monitoring. We did, Pat. What a great observation. You are so eloquent, and I love that you are on this podcast. You are a font of good ideas.
Well, now that you have yourself to congratulate, we don't have to do a thing for you, so thank you. Much obliged. You're right. Is that what you wanted to hear?
I love hearing it. I do. Yeah. You could say it again, even.
It's probably the last time I'm going to say it during this podcast. tracking that sort of stuff 100% needs to be done. If you have warnings and alerts that are going on when... Which it goes back again, right? If you're tying it to the host location, if you're geofencing the host in to certain locations, then you would know when they've done things like gone completely off the reservation or are out somewhere without any guests present or are looking for the maze that no one actually knows about. So scratch that because they wouldn't monitor that anyways.
What they could do is... have monitoring on the host using a GPS or something, and they should know the vicinity they're in. Or they could do like cell phones do and have different cell towers triangulate the position of a host. But Westworld chose to do none of this.
Because I can imagine a listener saying, well, then you'd have cell towers all over the place. We have a network of satellites. I think it's the Iridium network. That operates without any of that stuff. So it's definitely possible we've got it now and the show's in the future.
So let me try to give you another, I'll help you guys out here a little bit. There's another part here. I know I'm trying, buddy. There's another part here that I'm surprised you guys didn't jump at, which was when we've got hosts that are walking around the facility while they are accompanied by employees. They're definitely on floors that they're probably not supposed to be. Nobody seems to be noticing that. What could we be doing to, cut some of that down or stop it altogether because it shouldn't be happening?
Well, I'm glad you brought it up. I wasn't going to because my doctor told me I should avoid aneurysms, but...
Sorry, buddy. Send me the bill.
No problem. So... I think this goes back to what Joe and Pat have already touched on with either geofencing or GPS locating your hosts themselves, right? You know which floors they don't need to have access to at all. You know where they should not have access whatsoever. You should instantly know when those hosts have breached those boundaries. You should also know how many hosts you have at any given point in time. Like... this goes into a few different things. Your off-limits area, sure. The host crosses it. Warning. Alarm. Whatever. The fact that we also have, by that same token, a whole bunch of rogue hosts that aren't even on the network and are somehow moving about without setting off any alarms either.
Totally forgot about those, yeah.
Like, it's just a whole nother stage of it. There has to be some way that... you are making a distinction between the humans that you are tracking, the actual real people, whether they be employees or guests or board member, you know, whatever the case may be. You have hosts and you have people. You should know where your people are at all times, given the nature of the park, and you should know where your hosts are. If you start having, especially if for a company that is supposedly is worried about corporate espionage as this one, if you start having things that are sending out signals that are not recognized, if you have any sort of moving object the size of a person that is traipsing around the park without either being recognized as a guest or a worker or a host themselves, again, where the hell is your monitoring? Like, where are the alarms that there are off-limits areas and you have rogue hosts, or that you have off-limits areas with valid hosts? It goes back to they have no monitoring.
I feel like you've said that a couple times already.
I'm just guessing. Saying it every time we talk about this. There is zero monitoring.
It's kind of like running a retail store saying, man, I'm losing my money. You don't track people coming in and out. You can't predict sales cycles, and you have no inventory system.
How many people do we have in the store right now? I don't know. What do we have on the shelves?
Stuff. All right, so let me try to pull us back a little bit here. So we went through a ton of examples of stuff they did wrong. There's definitely a couple things that we said they did right. The whole point of this series that we're doing here is, what would we want to do differently if we ran the business? And I can already tell Chris's answer is going to be log everything.
No, not necessarily.
Okay, good. Where would you draw the line, or what could we do as our first steps of or maybe ground rules that we would have for these things?
Well, I mean, first steps, I think we have to figure out, like, looking at it from a logging perspective, I think we need to start with the monitoring. One, they haven't really gotten into the debugging itself and what kind of information is valuable. You need to figure out what that is, what your valuable debugging information is going to be before you decide what you're going to log, right? And that is, any of you step in and correct me here, something that you kind of figure out as you go. From a monitoring perspective, though, we already have some high-level things, right? Violation of one of the laws of robotics, send me an alarm. If the host is outside of a geofence that we've set for it, send me an alarm. If we have something that is arriving in the park that is neither host nor human, send me an alarm. And that's a pretty good place to start. There's definitely going to be other ones that you can drill down into, but like, you need to tick those major boxes of knowing where the product is at any given point in time before you can really start figuring out what the pie in the sky dreams are of other things we want to check.
Okay, so engineering puts the monitoring and the logging and everything in. You're saying send the alarm. Give me a little bit more detail. Where are we sending the alarm? Who's it going to? What's the response? Let's talk about the full stack on it.
So we have an ops center.
You're talking about the big room with the map in the middle?
Yeah, the room that I'm assuming is an ops center, okay. Even though in the last episode, when everything goes wrong, the thing locks down, so it's clearly not really an ops center. But I will touch on that later. You have, presumably, your observational room that you are observing the entire behavior of the park. One would assume, given that the big map is there and they have a whole bunch of computer screens where they can see some stuff on cameras and everything else. Why not send the alerts to there? Because it seems like they have some of the security people that are based out of that room. So it would be logical that the operations center would catch that first.
There's something I'd like to add there. If you're doing that, if you have your monitoring and you part of your monitoring is built into the or around the narratives the different hosts have, I think it's absolutely essential to get some cross-company membership in that ops center. You should have, if you're going to have narrative monitoring going on, you should have people from narrative there verifying, oh, okay, this person's off their narrative. Can they handle the situation? Okay, yeah, we're within acceptable bounds, but we got to watch this one. or man, no, we're not. We've got a bug here. We need to start trying to fix it for the next time we get guests in. We are off the rails. But just having, it appears that they just have security people there, based on the little bit we see of how it works. And you're just not going to be able to handle all of the different kinds of monitoring you ought to have with people just from security.
I agree with you. The execution of it can go a few different ways, I think. One is having those people present in the ops center itself. The other one that I've seen work pretty well in the past is having playbooks set up for certain events. So
can you define that?
Yeah, so I can define that for people that may not be familiar with it. Playbooks are usually what you have so that if a specific event is triggered, the people that are doing the monitoring know exactly what steps they need to follow in order to address that event. An example that I can give from previous work experience is when we had monitoring set up to watch over customer systems, if something were to go wrong in the middle of the night, we had a playbook specifically built up for each customer's systems and the way everything was laid out for them, so that if company A had a massive issue, in this case it would be if a specific type of host or a specific type of narrative had an issue, then you would have a full run through of who do I contact, who's the current on-call person that I need to be getting in touch with, if this becomes an escalated issue, who do I need to reach out to, are there any other security procedures in place? Like, should we be getting guests away from the affected area if this occurs? These are all things that would need to be fleshed out with those developers, with the narrative people, with security. That's where that cross-functional team really comes into play, I think, is building out that really well-done playbook so that when these events happen, it's very simple for whomever is there to involve the necessary parties and address the problem as quickly as possible.
I just like the fact that you're trying to make it idiot-proof, since we could tell that it's maybe not run by the best people to begin with right now.
Well, and I think that any time we're approaching something like this, especially something where you're talking about an issue in a production environment, you want it to be idiot-proof, not because you're assuming that you're going to be dealing with idiots, but because the stress of the situation is such that you need to make it as simple as possible so there is not room for error or room for there to be any sort of miscommunication. It's not so much appealing to the lowest common denominator as it is just trying to make sure that this is, you know, following KISS principle, and you're going to have better outcomes that way.
And we see in the last episode, one of the processes that they have, I mean, the level of stress that they have involved there is pretty extreme. I mean, dispatch armed responders to, shoot hosts until they stop moving is significantly more stressful than probably a lot of the situations that you'd see a playbook protocol applied to for software.
Yeah, but correct me if I'm wrong. If we did have a playbook and we saw all the, and there was a line in there for all the hosts coming out of the forest, coming after you and shooting you, I'm pretty sure the armed response is probably in the playbook.
Yeah, if they actually had a playbook that called out specifically the hosts are coming through the trees, then one, it's happened before, and F that I'm out. Two, like, yeah, F that I'm out.
Yeah, how do you decide where to draw the line in the scenarios to cover? Like a couple of years ago, I remember the CDC released a zombie outbreak guide, what to do. Like, kind of jokingly, because zombies may or may not be real. But in this situation, how do you decide how many entries are too far?
So first, I would like to take the opportunity to point out that none of us took the bait there.
Nice.
Second, I think that, so the CDC also, I believe, I've never been part of the CDC, so no one can quote me on this, but given the experience I have building out playbooks in the past, you're basing a lot of it off of previous experience, right? It's one of those things where I think we've talked about continuous reevaluation of processes before. You have things that you can foresee in advance, you know, from people that have worked in QA. There are things that you can kind of see as topics are being discussed. So for some of the items that you're going to find in the playbook, it's problems we can foresee just because we've been doing this for a while. For a lot of what you're going to find in the playbooks, it's we've encountered this kind of problem in the past, and this is how you address it moving forward. Playbooks are always going to get continually built out further by experiences. And I think the CDC one on zombie outbreaks, there have been outbreaks of many other diseases, and they were just likening disease to, you know, a zombie outbreak to make it more relatable for people like Joe. But they're still taking from, you know, past experiences in that kind of field. Pat?
So, yeah, I want to talk briefly about the CDC thing. Because it does
do.
Tie it. It's a slight detour, and then we'll bring it. I know. I can't help
There's
myself.
That hook.
It's a slight detour, and then we'll go right back to monitoring and wrap up here. The CDC released that document not because they believe a zombie outbreak is likely. They don't. Again, I guess since Chris did this, I've never been a part of the CDC either. None of us have. Apparently, this needs to be called out. Anyway, they did that because preparedness guides for outbreaks in general are hard to get people to read. And so they wanted to latch onto something that people would be more likely to actually look at. And it turns out that a bunch of the preparedness that you would do for a zombie outbreak, like having several days worth of food and water and other supplies, also apply to other serious disasters that affect infrastructure, like serious disease outbreaks. In fact, that idea, you know, the CDC using a popular but unrealistic situation to train people for realistic situations was part of the idea of this podcast, because a park where you go to fuck robots and murder them is probably not terribly practical, but a lot of the stuff that really everything that we're talking about here, we're drawing on our experiences from real world companies where we've seen these things fail. So, detour over. We're going back to monitoring and wrapping up on what we would do to make monitoring effective in Westworld, hopefully with a focus towards what's easier, cheaper, more practical, all of that, because it's not easy to start from nothing, you know, adding all of this capability.
I have already ranted on this subject for quite a bit at this point, so nobody probably wants to hear me continue, but...
But I'll go on.
I will continue to go on until one of you cuts me off and takes the mic away from me.
To find out more about this podcast and for the show notes of this episode, please go to dollarsandcentsofwestworld.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/dollarsandcentsofwestworld and on Twitter at _DASOW.